Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:05 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is December 5th. Well, I thought we'd kick off with China. The COVID zero policies continue to be rolled back. So the public outcry that occurred over the course of a couple of weeks at the end of November has been enough to shake out the somnolence of the administration there. And now they're rolling back a lot of the testing regime that was in place just in about just about every city in the country. So the Hang Seng was up 842 points today. It has now fully unwound the overextension relative to the 200-day moving average, and this is the first area of potential resistance. So it wouldn't be so surprising to see a little bit of pause and consolidation over the next couple of days. And what we're also starting to now see is that the government is injecting new liquidity. So 2 weeks ago, we had the announcement that they were going to provide almost $1 trillion to the property developers in order to get stalled projects back up and running. And last week, they also, excuse me, last month, they also injected upwards of 50 billion into the less liquid portion of the lending market, which is specifically aimed at infrastructure. So that's all really quite positive. But we're certainly at a short-term area of resistance. So I think that there's certainly the potential here that we're going to get some pause and consolidation. Now let's think about copper. Copper really is a barometer for the health of the Chinese economy. And the price was down in here today, so also pausing in the region of the 200-day moving average. And a good part of the reason for that was that the services PMI has come in higher than expected. And I guess not just a little higher, but quite a bit higher. So we're still at 56.5. The most important thing is that it's still in positive territory. And that suggests that the potential for a recession isn't going to be this year, and that it's going to take additional interest rate hikes and a longer period of time at higher rates in order to contain some of the speculative activity. And I think that it's important to start to think about this in very simple terms. There's a ton of money floating around, and we've had a very swift pace of interest rate hikes. We've had central banks just beginning to reduce the size of their respective balance sheets. And M2 peaked a year ago. In fact, it peaked more than a year ago. And it's now almost flat and certainly running below the rate of inflation. So we have negative real money supply growth. But that is coming hot on the heels of a decade where the size of the global stock of cash increased significantly. So the size of the Fed's balance sheet is contracting. There's absolutely no question of that. But it's still at 8.5 trillion versus 3 trillion back in 2013. And I think this is one of the biggest challenges in getting in control of some of these inflationary pressures. I saw an article today talking about Apollo and Oaktree heading off to Australia to court a number of the big superannuation funds over there and try and get them to invest in private credit. So, private credit has been enormously rewarding over the course of the last decade because the big banks and the big investment banks, they were basically cut out of at large portions of their business lines after the credit crisis. So non-bank lenders took over the US mortgage market, and Citadel basically became one of the biggest market makers within the equity markets. And then private equity firms, they had once would have had to compete with banks. Now they are in the aftermath of the credit crisis, then they've done spectacularly well. So Blackstone is now, well, let's just, I guess, get to the end of that list. Then, of course, the other side of that equation is that large numbers of pensions had been relying on fixed income and the surety of a higher yield for years. Then those yields disappeared, so they had to move further out onto the risk horizon. So you had both the give and the take here, and the private equity firms, well, they were providing opportunities, they had ample resources at their disposal. Then, in turn, those ample resources were inflating private assets. But one thing then that I think is also rather interesting, because I was invited to this dinner by a hedge fund raising cash last month. And what I thought was interesting is that they had their own strategy for buying, which was algorithmically based and very much based on the Hurst exponent from technical analysis, but that they had basically outsourced the hedging element of their fund to Goldman Sachs Asset Management. And I thought that that was interesting, that what they were effectively doing was using these exact same alternative assets which pension funds have been relying on to pad out their returns as hedges against an equity portfolio or long short portfolio. And I talked about this with several people as I went around. And what I've come to understand is that this isn't a policy that's uncommon, that in fact, Goldman Asset Management is considered to be the gold standard of alternative investments for hedges, and that large numbers of hedge funds have basically outsourced their hedging activity to Goldman Asset Management. Now, if we think about Blackstone, the publicly listed share truly accelerated in 2020 through 2021. But it's also worth, and it is, I think, it's really very helpful that they listed themselves back in 2007, so that we can see that at the depths of the bear market in 2009, the share was trading around 267, and it peaked last year at 150. So, yes, prices have come down a lot since then, but they're still miles above where they were in 2008. And the thing, of course, is that it is still heading downwards. So, the ISM figure suggests that the Federal Reserve, they might slow down the pace of interest rate hikes this month, or next week, realistically, but that they're probably going to have to keep hiking for a while yet. And that is really not good news for these types of companies that have gone out on the limb and really loaded up le on a leveraged basis in alternative assets. So the alternative assets, I think, fall into two big categories. The first category would be commercial properties. So it would be buying big buildings, office buildings, then data center built warehouses, and then of course warehouses as well. So it's all those kinds of alternative assets that are in many respects very levered to cloud computing, and then also to the evolution of the startup sector, all those small companies that were getting money for nothing, and then putting it to as good an effect as they could without really having to worry about profitability. And I think it is then, considering how many hedge funds have outsourced their hedging to Goldman Sachs, we should really pay attention to Goldman's share price, because it popped on the upside right off the lows in October and rallied faster than the wider market. Well, that also helps to tell us that what Goldman is managing is also very market sensitive. And with stocks now beginning to pull back, then the share is also starting to roll over. If it starts pulling back below the 200-day moving average, well, I think we might at least give some credence to the view that assets are starting to be pulled out of some of those funds. But what I also found was that some of these longer dated hedges, they have lock-in periods that could stretch for a decade. So if money was put into them in 2020, that you won't be able to take your money out until 2030, regardless of what the assets inside the portfolio were worth. And that is a recipe for a really significant liquidity issue for the customers of these kinds of hedge strategies. So there's a lot of liquidity that's still sloshing around the market. There are a lot of people that are very eager to push money into different assets, but the reality is that we're not going to get in control of inflation until these kinds of issues are contained. Then I think it's particularly relevant that one of the biggest cloud infrastructure providers, Amazon, is still trending downwards. It has failed to sustain a move above $100 and is now looking like it is falling once more. And I've seen several articles talking about how Amazon is losing $10 billion a year on Alexa. And but I think the other important point is that the mail creation system for sending inventory to Amazon for sellers was malfunctioning for the last 5 days, so you couldn't print shipping labels to send inventory to their warehouses. And we've phoned up their customer service department several times over the last 5 days and been continually put on the long finger. So Mrs. Tracy hasn't been able to send additional inventory and risks running out. And they've clearly said that she's the only person experiencing this problem, and I really have my doubts as to whether that is true. And sometimes when big companies fire people, they fire the wrong people, and they leave what are called nasty little Easter eggs in the code. And I think perhaps we might be seeing that in Amazon. So I think there's really the potential that prices come back down. Now, Google and Microsoft are in the same data center business, but they have higher margin other businesses that they rely on. Whereas Amazon Web Services is Amazon's high margin business, then Google is right in the region of the lower side of the overhead trading range and pausing in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. And Microsoft is also in a reasonably consistent medium-term downtrend and pausing in the region of the 200-day moving average and the lower side of the overhead trading range. So there is certainly potential here that we might see some additional weaker markets. So even though China is opening up, the withdrawal of global liquidity is sapping demand for China's exports, and that's not great news. And they're really going to have to do a lot to try and reinvigorate demand within the Chinese economy. The one thing that has not occurred in China that happened everywhere else was a massive surge of support for ordinary consumers. Of course, that also helped to contain inflationary pressures, but it removes some of the impetus for a big spending spree after the lockdowns end. So what happens in China is certainly going to be really very important. Now, because there's the potential that interest rates will be going up for longer, 10-year yields were up 10 basis points today, so firming from the 3.5% level. And that's not a big move on the chart, but gold pulled back by $30. So certainly exhibiting some resistance here in the region of the 200-day moving average. And it now looks like we're going to get at least some pause and consolidation here. And of course, the bigger picture is that it has broken the sequence of lower rally highs since the peak in March, April, and this is probably only going to be some consolidation in the region of that peak from 2011, and that ultimately gold on the upside. If we then look at the dollar index, it's in positive territory, but not in nearly as dynamic a manner as it could be. And it just looks like a little bit of steadier action in the region of the 200-day moving average. The reality is that the pace of interest rate hikes is likely to moderate, and other countries are going to continue to raise rates as well. So the interest rate differential the dollar has been thriving on for the last couple of years does appear to be contracting, but certainly we have the potential at least for a rebound. And I think the best case scenario is that the rebound could take it all the way back up to the 110 level. So this is also a headwind for Europe, for US equities. Now, when we look at what's going on in Europe, the Euro Stoxx index was in negative territory, but not in a dynamic manner. It's been really inert for the last couple of weeks and holding the move above the 200-day moving average. So it has clearly broken the downtrend. And then the stronger currency has also been an added kicker for foreign investors. So I think these are important characteristics. Then the Nifty index is still holding on to its gain and was well off its low in here today. One thing that I think is particularly important for India is the oil price, and it was in negative territory again today. So it popped on the upside initially following the ISM figure and then reversed and came straight back down again. This doesn't look like a bullish chart. I know that there are lots of people who think that prices are going to ramp higher over the winter, but we just don't have any evidence for that. And there's certainly a tight environment in the diesel market. And there are very good reasons for that because shipping has come into a lot of focus when it comes to diesel. Ships don't use bunker fuel any longer. Instead, they are using diesel more often than not, and then they're just driving slower. So that has created a whole new source of demand for diesel. But as we see here with Costamare, and we can see what they do, they operate container ships. So if we look at the just commodity export volume for container ships, then I'm hoping I've got the right chart here, and this is not what I wanted. Let's see if we go. One thing I've this is the one that I wanted. I do apologize. What we have here is a peak right at the end of 2021, and the volume of 40-foot containers has collapsed in 2022. So this massive surge in demand and inventory build that went on during 2020 and 2021 is over. And we're now coming back into what might have been considered normal conditions prior. So moving 2,000 containers is a lot easier than moving 10,000. Now, that suggests that there's less demand for container ships, and that's putting downward pressure on diesel prices. It doesn't mean that there's more diesel being produced. So diesel prices are coming down, but diesel refineries are closing down. And this is really rather significant. You can there's I think this big question about whether Tesla's semi truck is going to do to the sedan, or is going to do to the haulage sector what it did to the luxury sedan sector. And I just don't think that that's likely. The reality is that diesel trucks can drive 1,000 miles without refueling, and they do so reliably. And then refueling isn't rocket science. When we think about the Tesla Semi, if they can go 500 miles, and then they rely on a charger that needs to be able to supply a megawatt of energy, so it's a super fast charger, and the draw on electricity to get that done is simply phenomenally large. Well, what it suggests is that these Haulage vehicles produced by Tesla are likely to simply be for moving stuff around cities or in the environs of cities, and that the transcontinental routes are still going to be with diesel-powered vehicles. So it's really just more virtue signaling. Now, the share price held on to its move in here today. It's finishing out the day just high, just higher, but it's still below $200, and it's pausing in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. We still have this sequence of lower rally highs, so it's still a medium-term downtrend, and more importantly than that, it has broken any semblance of consistency that had been in place from the breakout in late 2019 is now gone. Then it's also worth highlighting that Bitcoin prices were in mildly negative territory today, down $160, so pausing at the upper side of the most recent of these inert ranges. So I think that as we filter through and look at where interest rates are likely to peak, which is quite possibly going to be somewhere around 6%, then the Federal Reserve has got quite a ways to go. And as a liquidity barometer, Bitcoin is likely to trend lower as a result of that. So we're certainly in a still a very difficult market environment. The bond prices are still contracting here because of the potential for more interest rate hikes. Bonds are likely, or bond yields are likely to contract the further along we go towards a recession, because eventually investors will start to price in deflation. But we're not quite there yet, and the yield is a little bit overextended in the short term, so we might get a little bit of pause and a bit of a rebound before we see fresh new lows. Gold is a little bit overbought, so it's going to see some consolidation. And oil prices, well, they're still trending downwards. And I think this is a graphic representation of less global demand, that we've had a ton of new money created, and that money is being slowly siphoned out of the market, so it's going to weigh heavily on leveraged products. And there are still going to be liquidity issues, and that's going to likely be remain the case until we see clear evidence of a pivot in interest rate policy, and we're just not there yet. I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.